intriguing and informative guests, and you get one of the most listened to Saturday morning streaming media political talk shows going today. And it's all right here on our flagship station, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. So join me, The Fetch, for Inside the Eye Live every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern. It is truly intelligent media for the politically aware.
Tell you a little bit about Revolution Radio. Revolution Radio brings you a platform unlike anything on the internet today. A place where voices are heard, ideas are shared, and friendships are formed. So why not join the information revolution at freedomslips.com, where information never sleeps.
Just great. In your mind, does the world seem inverted, backward, dissonant? Dare to think out loud. You see your rights, freedoms, your very way of life being attacked, systematically eroded. Dare to think out loud. You observe traitorous evil rewarded, stealing the future from your children and grandchildren. Dare to think out loud. You question all the jingoistic propaganda claimed to be history. Dare to think out loud. You have tuned in to the right show. Dare to think out loud. Here's an expert on original source true history, your host, the Rebel Madman, Michael Gaddy.
Well, here we are, celebrating another week of insanity on Dare to Think Out Loud here on Revolution Radio Studio A. And today we're going to broach the subject of, can we fix this thing? And for those of you who have suffered a public fool education, the thing we're talking about is the mess this country is in. And every day I am further convinced that it is a physical and total impossibility. For today, I saw where the Secretary of Defense, the SecDef, issued a proclamation celebrating the transgender soldiers of the Revolutionary and Civil Wars. I'm not kidding, people. That was an official proclamation today. Now, how this loony bastard knew anyone was period is beyond my even perception. But if you do not realize you are in the middle of the loony bin by now, chances are you're not going to recover and you're going to think everything is just hunky-dunky. Well, today I've got three very close friends of mine, gentlemen I think just one hell of a lot. And we'll start with the one who happens to be the farthest away. He's stuck up down there in Ecuador somewhere, and, he's hiding from who knows who, and he can't wait to get back here so he can hide from somebody else. Anyway, giving him a hard time today. Hey, Scorpio, how you doing, my friend?
Doing good, Mike. Yeah, I'm just hiding in the shadows here to come back to the States and hide in the shadows some more.
Well, that works. And then... Yeah. A gentleman that I have known for quite some time who completely and totally destroyed his career in broadcasting by being stupid enough to ask me to come on his program. And that would be Dale Williams from out there in Utah land. Dale, how you doing, friend?
I'm good, Mike. We had a good time, didn't we?
Oh, we certainly did. I sure enjoyed it. I'm sorry that it led to your public broadcasting demise, but, you know, we had fun. You're exactly right. And then from a gentleman who is from the icebox of America, known as the Arizona desert, you know, and I realized that there are people in the weather situation who are now really surprised that it gets hot in Arizona in the summertime. So that again shows you the level of mentality of the people we're dealing with. But Cal has escaped for Father's Day, and Cal is up in Northern Nevada, and he's up there having a good time, celebrating a Father's Day weekend with family. Cal, how you doing, my friend?
Doing good, Mike. Doing good. Just, you know, escaped the 120s down there in Arizona to the just over 100 to 105 up here in Northern Nevada.
Oh, what a trade.
Nice and cool. I'm about going to have to get the parka out if it gets any cooler than this.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Gentlemen, we're going to get into this discussion, but there's something that happened this week, and maybe you guys can help me figure this out. I got a message that said that gave a weather story, and I was trying to locate it. Maybe I'll be able to find it. Maybe I won't. But it was a weather story that came out on Thursday. No, Wednesday. I'm sorry. It came out on Wednesday, and it spoke of a... Oh, gosh, guys. What's that noise? Oh, well, it looks like it's going to be with us for a while. Anyway, a story that came out that spoke of a very heavy downpour and rainfall, which caused, just terrible flooding in, of all places, Istanbul, Turkey. And there were pictures along with the newscast showing all of this water on, you know, overpasses over water and all of these other things. Well, in the normal world, gosh, guys, I still can't figure out what that background noise is.
I'm on mute, so it's not me.
Okay. Well, it sounds like somebody's having fun. But anyway, here was this, on the internet about talking about the flooding conditions. Oh, they're having October floods in Istanbul, Turkey, and it's only June, and it was just terrible on the 15th and all this other stuff. Well, ordinarily, guys, I would have looked at that and said, oh, well, you know, gosh, that's too bad. They sure having a lot of rain there. But there was one thing that was kind of strange to me because my son was in Istanbul. So I talked with him by text, and he said, Dad, I don't know what you're talking about. There's no floods here. So then we looked at some other weather forecasts. He said, yeah, we've had a couple of rain showers, but they're passing. There's nothing of any flood value here. So, guys, you know, is the news agencies in this country so corrupt they just lie for practice? What would be the purpose of putting out a story about flooding in Istanbul if it wasn't occurring? Cal, what do you think?
To further the false narrative of global climate change.
That was the only thing I could come up with, that they're going to use that somewhere down the road to say, yeah, look what we've done. We had these floods in Istanbul in June, and here's the pictures, when it never really occurred.
Yeah, Mike, and, you know, I was just reading an article just yesterday from some muckety-muck academic at the University of London saying that we may have to have lockdowns to save the climate, okay? So they're already trying to float this idea, and then on the – I saw a clip of the news today, and it's apparently very dangerous. There's going to be some rain in Florida and Alabama and Mississippi, so it's very dangerous, and – we have to be on alert for it.
Dale, what are your thoughts? Why would they create this false narrative about floods in Istanbul if it's not occurring?
Well, I would echo what Cal said. It's just, you know, putting more grist in the mill of the, you know, this crisis, this ongoing crisis that they're trying to propose, trying to drill, have been drilling into the heads of school kids and everybody else here for 40 years or more, that it, the idea of, you know, they're always feeling around for the best lever to push the world revolutionary movement into its next phase, to increase the tempo. And the green, the green lever is one that they haven't abandoned by any means. And young people are so responsive to it. This idea that we have to consolidate government and create a real authoritarian society in order to deal with this existential threat of global warming and the CO content of the atmosphere and all this crap. It's amazing how much mileage they've gotten out of it. So they're still putting resources into it, into promoting that.
Well, here I actually found the story again, and here it is. It says October weather in June, sudden heavy downpour triggers paralyzing floods in Istanbul, Turkey. June 16th, 2021 at 1527. And then it says a sudden flood inducing rainfall paralyzed daily life in Istanbul, Turkey on Tuesday, June the 15th, 2021. Roads turned into lakes as floodwaters engulfed underpasses, submerging many vehicles and stranding motorists. The severe weather is expected to continue until Monday, June the 21st. Turkey is experiencing extraordinary meteorological events, said meteorologist Orhan Sen, S-E-N. We saw a strong winter in March, and we see weather like October in June. The General Directorate of Meteorology issued a warning moments before the heavy downpours hit the city, leaving residents with little time to prepare. The city's European side was hit particularly hard, with the worst affected areas, Esenyurt, Fight, you know, however you pronounce the names, and all of those where underpasses were submerged and motorists stranded. Well, ironically, my son was in the European side when they said this happened, and he sent me pictures that with the sun with a few clouds in the sky, and he also sent some video. And here's a question before we really jump into the, can this thing be fixed? Guys, is there any lie that the government can tell and that the media will echo that Bubas won't believe?
Dave? I would say no.
Go ahead, Cal. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Cal.
I would say it was Dale talking.
Oh, Dale's in the hole. Okay. I'm sorry.
I can't think of one. I almost would say don't get me started, but I guess that's why we're here on the radio. You know, listen, they've got 500, four to 500 people underneath the DC jail, most of whom didn't do anything wrong, and in fact, I think you could argue that almost none of them did anything wrong, and the rest of us didn't do a lot of things we should have done, or should be doing, but they've got those people in there, and they're beating up on them and putting them 22 hours a day in confinement, and nothing is happening except token Republican, you know, utterances coming out of a handful of senators. Not going to amount to anything. So it's very far along. It's very far along, and that thing you're describing, which is the predictive programming, that's really the framework of anybody who's been publicly schooled, the framework of all their thinking, the framework that all their percepts are organized in, is a predictive program. And so they just take on the new articles issued for that program and keep going and don't question. And that's really the immovable object we're dealing with. It doesn't matter what the enlightened piece, the more enlightened part of the population does. It matters what the ignoramuses do.
because that's why populism has always been the only thing that's really paid any dividends, is because it acknowledges the fact that if you can't get the herd to go with you, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what else happens. And the communists understand that perfectly. For some reason, they've always understood that.
Oh, okay. Dave, your thoughts? You're muted, Dave.
Yeah. Again, I just see this as part of an attempt to convince the world that we're in a climate emergency and we're going to have to take drastic action to save the world. And I think we're going to see this drumbeat increase as the COVID narrative possibly begins to fall apart. It's hard to know if there isn't going to be some kind of resurgence of that with the Delta variant this fall and winter. But I just expect one, basically big picture, I just expect one crisis after another that will necessitate federal and global intervention.
Oh, well, I'm sure that's, the Hegelian dialectic. The government creates a problem, then the government says we're the only people who can fix it. Right. And every time they work on it, it gets worse.
That's right, yeah.
One of the things that I saw this week that was kind of troubling, too, was it seems, and this is, I'm just saying what I heard. Of course, I also heard that Istanbul was flooded. But I got a news article that says that the legislature from the state of Missouri had passed legislation which denied and said we will not enforce any federal gun laws in the state of Missouri. Well, allegedly, right after they pass this piece of legislation, they get a call or a something from the U.S. Department of Justice. And the U.S. Department of Justice tells them that, hey, we have the supremacy clause in the U.S. Constitution, and it tells us that we can enforce any federal law in the state of Missouri that we want, and we will. Now, here's the point. I go again to a verse in Scripture, Isaiah 4:6, which says, my people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge, and they have rejected knowledge. So let's put that to work here with the Missouri situation. Guys, if you were the Attorney General for the state of Missouri, what would your response to the Department of Justice be? Go ahead, Cal.
My response... I would tell them to pound sand.
How would you address it, though?
That's difficult because I couldn't be an attorney general because I'd probably have everybody in the state government thrown into the brig, too. I would address it by saying that actually, no, the right to keep and bear arms is a natural right. And neither the federal government nor the state government nor any other government has any right to infringe upon that right. But that would be me. And I, like I said, with that attitude, I could never serve in government. What we're looking at, like with that example from Istanbul, Turkey, and all that is it's just conditioning, mind control conditioning, to get the people to accept and to rely on government. They create a boogeyman and then they fix it. Well, look what the government's done for me. I mean, I just saw today that where I guess on July 1st, Tennessee has what's called freedom carry, where you no longer need a permit to carry open or concealed. And I'm kind of like, I never needed a permit to begin with, though. Why should I be grateful to government for saying, well, yeah, you have the right to exercise a right that I already have. I don't need government's permission, but government puts this stuff out there to make them look like they're the ones that did the good deed for you. But it's just conditioning is all it is. People are celebrating that, oh, look, Tennessee, we can carry guns openly and carry it in Tennessee. It's like, but you should be able to anyway. Why? What's the big deal? That's just me. And that's okay. What I see going on is that they're just conditioning people to, well, my government's good because it grants me privileges. And so what I'm seeing is people with a slave mentality begging their master for privileges.
Okay,
am I off,
Dave,
on that?
Yeah.
No. I think you're exactly right. But I want to listen to what you guys got to say, and then I have my formal response, what I would do, and it would be on the evening news. But go ahead, Dave. Give me your response.
Well, Mike, you know, this is very significant and on several levels, because for one thing, it's sort of a preemptive strike by Missouri because they know that restrictive gun laws are going to be passed. And secondly, this is a part of a growing trend among states to disregard what the federal government says. And I think that's one of the unintended consequences of this COVID crisis, so-called crisis, is that I'm sure there's people within the states that realize the whole thing was a giant scam and they're damn pissed off about it, to be honest. And I don't know how the attorney general will respond in Missouri, but I don't know if you saw this, but the attorney general in Arizona sent an absolutely scathing letter to this Garland character saying that, look, you know, the states created the federal government, not the other way around. You're not going to come in here and tell us how to run our state. And so, you know, pretty much as Cal said, go pound sand. I just see this as part of a larger trend that's going to only increase over time because this federal government is out for everything. And at least this, as bad as the state governments are, at least they have some connection to the people they govern, whereas the federal government has absolutely no connection whatsoever to the American people.
Okay, great response. Dale, what would be your response?
Yeah, that's a complete decoupling, and I couldn't agree more. Unto themselves, it's they're really segregated and have been for quite some time. And anything, any response to the public will. But Mike, if I understand correctly, your expertise is in counterintelligence. Is that correct?
Well, if I have any expertise, that might be where I hit it.
Right. So. What do you think? I'm going to reverse your question a little bit. What do you think the central government is going to do, or you know, its freelance assets are going to be tasked to do when you have some of these rumblings, like coming out of Missouri, Arizona, the apparent axis between Florida and Texas with respect to immigration? Although I think most of that is smoke. When you start to hear these rumblings, what's the natural step that you take as a tyrannical entity like that?
Well, first off, I want to provide my answer that I would give if I was the Attorney General of the state of Missouri. And I would call a press conference, and I would do it on the Capitol steps or wherever they wanted to do it. But I would say... I would like to alert the Attorney General of the United States, who is allegedly the best lawyer in the room. I would like to ask you, sir, have you ever read the damn Constitution? Because obviously your statement telling us that the Supremacy Clause overrides our state legislature, if you had actually maybe picked up the Constitution at one time or another and actually read it and then looked at Article 6, Paragraph 2, if you're still capable of reading and comprehending, you would see that for any law to be supreme over those of the states, it must be in pursuance of the Constitution. Now, Mr. Attorney General. I don't know whether you know it or not, but there are amendments that were ratified by the states in that Constitution, and one of them happens to be the Second Amendment. And anything that you do that goes contrary to the Second Amendment is treason, as is defined in Article 3, Section 3, as waging war on the states. So if you want to pursue this, Mr. Attorney General, you would be guilty of treason. Not simply malfeasance, you would be guilty of treason. So either read the damn Constitution or shut the hell up. Now, I realize I probably wouldn't be around too long. Arkansas is right next door. I would probably be Arkansas-ed within a couple of days, but that would be my response. And before I get to answering Dale's question, I would like you guys to give me your response to my response. Cal, go first.
There we go. I was trying to unmute. My response to your response, as if I was the federal government trying to respond to you, or...
No, your thoughts.
Well, if the Constitution is what the federal Senate is, then what you said is true. But the Constitution, to begin with, that created the federal government, isn't what we were taught it was. So, under the common narrative, yeah, everything you said about the Second Amendment and that the people, you know, the states created the federal government and all that, that's true under the narrative we were all taught, though it is the false narrative in the overall picture. So that's, I understand making a constitutional argument, and it's true within that framework. So I agree with that. That makes sense, I hope.
Well, what I was trying to do with that is to try to appeal to Bubas, who would place the faith in the Constitution. So I wanted to use the ignorance of the Constitution to kick the bastards in the ass.
Okay, then I would totally agree with what you said. If we were trying to persuade Bubas and get Bubas behind us, yes, totally, completely agree.
Well, what do you think, Dave?
Well, Mike, this is a fascinating discussion. And, you know, what I think is happening, too, below the surface here is more and more states are realizing that this Garland character is an absolute radical. I think he has read the Constitution, but he doesn't give a damn and wants to completely subvert the system of government. This guy's a full-on globalist. And wants to completely transform the system by which we live. And as this becomes more and more clear, we're going to see these kind of conflicts only accelerate and become, you know, the gap, you know, widening between certain states and this federal government. And I think it's a fascinating development. And I think there's no stopping it. It's only going to increase, Mike.
Well, let me make this point to one thing you said there, Dave, and that was, having worked very closely with a plethora of Arkansas lawyers for the better part of 2 years, I can correct one part of what you said, and that is 99% of the lawyers in this country wouldn't know the damn Constitution if they found it floating in their breakfast cereal. Law schools do not teach the Constitution. It's very seldom ever mentioned. In law schools, they are taught to make everything that they do based on what the Supreme Court has said in the past, what the courts have ruled, stare decisis, already settled. If you're a lawyer, all you look at is settled law. I asked one lady who was an attorney, nice lady, and she had asked me to kind of school her for she was planning to run for the legislature, and she wanted me to help her with the Constitution. And a very nice lady, very intelligent, but she told me when I asked her, I said, how many hours in law school did you spend on the Constitution? the study of the Constitution in your 3-year program. And she said, I think we might have spent an hour one day talking about it. And almost every attorney I have asked, people, the law schools of this country are bastions of Marxism. They are not going to teach anybody about freedom. It goes against everything they stand for. And then stop and think about that, that who gets to be judges? They don't take radio talk show hosts and make them judges. You have to be a lawyer. You have to be trained in deception and deceit.
Yeah, and manipulation. Mike, and it's the worst of the lawyers that ascend to becoming a judge, usually the ones that have proven their fealty to the corruption.
Well, that is true. You play the political game, and there was an old joke about what do you call the guy who finishes last in his law school class, and that's Your Honor.
Yeah.
So, Dale, what's your thoughts about my response?
You know, I think it's great, Mike, and that it's a George Wallace type of a gesture, but I think it would amount to about the same results. You know, I think it would create a little euphoria at first, and you know, you stood in the doorway as the governor or the attorney general, and you laid down the moral, you established the moral high ground and everything else. And this Marxist steamroller would just run you over, you and all, and the trail of people who are encouraged by you and who would support you, and the rest of the folks would just head for the weeds. Yeah, I want to suggest some, because I know you, Mike, personally, and I don't have any reason to flatter you, but I struggle just to keep up with you most of the time, so I listen very carefully to your analysis of things and your responses, and these other gents who are sort of new acquaintances seem very together and switched on to what's going on. So I want to throw a couple of premises or assertions or statements at you guys, and maybe you'd respond as you will. See, I think a liberal, small d democratic society, liberal in the Jeffersonian sense, is actually the chosen medium in which Marxism would choose. You know, it's the medium the Marxists would choose in order to breed their ideology and to advance their ideology. That's what's happening here. All these people you're talking about, the ATF nominee, the guy that had the nominee, these people are Marxist cadre. And Merrick Garland, Jesus help us. I mean, the guy is a monster. But they have got hold of our democratic institutions. And so then the Constitution and the institutions themselves become weaponized, and we as Americans don't know what to do, because we've been taught since kids that if you don't do things within this framework, you're lost. And so we just keep looping back and repeating the same sequence of errors. I would like to know what you guys think. Does it take a tyranny to overcome a tyranny? I think so. What do you think?
I think it takes a whole different thought and approach towards what government is. Can I give what my response to the attorney general would be?
Please.
And that would be simply Moulin Lavé. Come and take them. Come and try. You have to reach the point where, you know, you can only prostrate yourself in front of government for so long before you realize that boot is on your neck. I mean, it happened back in the 18th century. I mean, they pleaded with the crown for so long and finally decided we can't plead with this anymore. We've got to actually physically stand up and defend our rights. Without force, all your rights are lost. There's Patrick Henry said that somewhere. I'm sure Mike could quote it right off the bat, but yeah, it's without force, everything's lost. And I'm not saying that you go out and attack government. They have to make the first move, but you got to be ready for them when they come, because they will be coming.
Well, Mike, can I respond to Cal?
Please do, Dave. Please do.
Yeah, Cal, you know, I think you're exactly right. And it is going to come down to force. There's no question about that. And I think that's becoming more clear as we move along here. It's no longer this hypothetical maybe. I mean, that is going to be what's happening. And I think what's going to happen, too, is states that resist this federal government are going to be targeted by you know, agents coming into the state trying to stir up trouble and create problems internally within the state to try to turn the people against the state and make them think that only the federal government can come in and save them.
Okay.
That was my purpose in asking you that question back a few minutes ago, Mike, is that what are you planning to do as the federal government? Because, you know, they have a contingency plan and they have a plan and they have at least two alternate plans for everything.
My plan. I know exactly how I would respond to Cal's statement and how I would respond to you gentlemen if you had made that kind of comment. I would have said on the evening news, well, see, look, we're dealing with extremists here who do not want to follow the Constitution. Then they have turned Bubas totally against you. If you want to, you have to use their playground, you have to use their ball and shove it up their backside. If you're going to, now I realize again, and you're exactly right, but if you give them that would be the perfect setup. If I would have drawn this up myself as a measure, I would have said, okay, I would have called, if I was leading the opposition here, I would have called the Attorney General from Missouri and said, hey, you can't do that. Pardon me, because we have a supremacy clause in the Constitution and we're going to do what we want to do. And because we are supreme, it says so in the Constitution. What they have done is if you don't respond in like form, you are a radical, you are an extremist, and you play right into their game plan. You have to understand what these people are trying to accomplish, and you have to take that away from them. And yes, I would have loved nothing more than if he said that, to say, Molon Labe, come and take it. But then in the eyes of Bubas, I became an extremist. I became a domestic terrorist, and the people would not support me. But if the people see a person seize the weapon that the federal government has chosen to use and take that weapon and turn it on them, and then people would actually, who probably had never looked at the Constitution before, would run to see what Article 6, Paragraph 2 says. And then they would go, damn, he's right. The government's wrong.
What does it say?
It says that any law passed, you know, treaty or what have you, to be a supreme must be in pursuance of the Constitution, which means it has to follow the Constitution. And if we're going to turn Bubas, we have to prove to Bubas that these people are idiots. And we're not going to do that by challenging them to come and take them. Although I totally agree with that philosophy. Yeah, come and take it. But I'm talking about a different parameter here. If they're going to use the Constitution, let's turn it on them and shove it down their throats. And how many people would you reach, Bubas out there, who's sitting on the fence wondering what the hell's going on in this country? And believe me, people, there's more of them right now who are sitting back going, something's wrong, but I don't know what it is. And that is the group of people that you have to reach. And if the people who were sitting there, and I said, Molon Labe, come and get them, you know, up yours, pound sand, that's a reactionary remark that they're actually looking for. So if you want to change this, You have to use their weapon, and you have to defeat them in their own weapon, on their own field, with their own game. And you mentioned the intelligence field. That I know exactly what they're looking for with these remarks. I know exactly what they're what their plans are, because they haven't changed their game plan, because the damn thing works. No matter how many times they use it, Bubas falls for it. And why does Bubas fall for it? Because when have you ever seen anyone take the Constitution and shove it back on them? When they say, oh, we're doing it, and they cite the Constitution, you have to prove they don't know what the hell they're talking about with the Constitution. That's why I've said for 30 years, education is critical. Go ahead, gentlemen.
Well, I hear you, Mike. One of the problems I see, it's an ideal solution, what you're talking about, but it requires communicating with the masses, and of course they've got all those channels, just about all those channels sealed off. So.
Well, that's why I said it would have been done. I would have called a press conference. It would have been on the evening news. You have to use their medium, too, because I promise you, if the Attorney General of Missouri was going to deliver an announcement, the first thing I'll tell you, he's not going to mention the Constitution because he doesn't know it either. But what I'm talking about is that the whatever we want to call them out there, the masses who are now realizing, and this is happening, guys, I'll tell you why I know it's happening. Because they decided they needed to throw out some sacrificial lambs, and they threw out Fauci. And it's like I said yesterday, Fauci was the likely guy to go. He's 80 years old. He's worth about $40 billion. Nothing's going to happen to him. He's not going to be prosecuted. None of this is going to happen. That's all pie in the sky to keep Bubas busy. You know, you give him a play toy, you know, something to where he'll look at it, give him a shiny object so he'll have something to play with so he doesn't notice what the hell you're really doing. And so they've started to sacrifice people, which tells me in the intelligence field, they realize there are some people who are catching on to the game. And in the intelligence and counterintelligence field, when you find your opposition beginning to catch on to the game, you have to give them something and turn the tables on them. So in my opinion, the government has acknowledged that, hey, there's people out there waking up. You wouldn't have had Jon Stewart say what he did to Colbert the other night on TV. You wouldn't have that kind of stuff on the national TV. These people do not make mistakes.
Right, that was a...
Go ahead.
Yeah, that was an attempt to decompress the opposition a little bit, like throw them a bone, like you say.
That's exactly the game plan. You do that, but the point is you always want to meet anyone, you want to make anyone who looks like they would oppose you, you have to immediately put them into the category of domestic terrorist, a radical, a racist, whatever term we'll use that will make Bubas go, oh, I can't believe that guy. But if that guy doesn't say anything reactionary except, okay, go learn your damn Constitution, butthole, because that ain't what it says. Because I guarantee you there would be people who would be running to look at their Constitution, probably, you know, the good Christian Republicans would have it in their pocket somewhere, and they would pull it out and actually read it. And they'd go, oh, damn, he's right. It does say in pursuance of. And I'm just
My sense. Go ahead, Mike. Go ahead.
No, I'm just offering my thoughts, looking at it from the intelligence position and looking at the mind control, what they're trying to do intellectually to the public, because their only tool is emotion. Because they can't play on facts. They have no facts. Go ahead, Cal.
So the state stands up to the federal government and says, here, look at the Constitution. It says you can't do that. And the federal government goes, oh, yeah, I guess you're right. So now Bubas is all going, well, look, the Constitution works. no, it didn't. It didn't fix any of the structural problems in the Constitution. So the powers that be win no matter how the outcome comes out.
The point of it is, Cal, is you have to look at this position not as a person who is knowledgeable of the Constitution, because Bubas is not. You're assuming that Bubas knows as much about the Constitution as you do.
No, no, I'm looking at it from the government or the powers of be point of view. Is they win no matter what happens. We can make this threat. The state can stand up to us. We can back down. And Bubas now has more faith in the Constitution, which actually in the long run gives us more power. So I'm looking at it from, you know, they can put this out there and they can win no matter which scenario comes into fruition. The game is so rigged that they win no matter what. And that's why I'm seeing.
Well, but again, you are looking at it. You're not looking at it from the intelligence and counterintelligence point of view. You're looking at it from a reality position, is that people don't know it. But the point of it is, if you're ever going to do anything with this damn government, you have to get people on your side. And telling them, come and take it, is not going to convert anybody. So if we have any chance whatsoever, it has to be, let's turn their own game on them. And let's prove to Bubas that they're trying to use something against us that they shouldn't be allowed to do. Now, yes, they are going to continue to use their tools. They're going to continue because they didn't intend this Constitution to protect the people. Anyway, the Constitution was written to protect government, and we know that. But you have to start somewhere. You have to at least prove to some people that they're trying to use this thing, and they really, it's really not there.
I think what we're looking at is that the FBI and the other organs are perfectly aware that there are thousands of small clusters of men, informed, well-informed men, who are preparing for the worst in this country. And it's probably about time for Oklahoma City, in the calculus of the intelligence community, which has been, as I understand it, entirely turned inward to control the domestic threats to the government. So how far would we be, Mike or Cal or Scorpio, anybody interested in your opinion, how close are we to the next Oklahoma City, do you reckon?
It depends on how many people begin to catch on to what they're doing. But at some point in time, that Bubas that you converted by turning the Constitution on the government, he might not believe the next false flag.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you just say, come and take them, or, pound sand, I'm sorry, you're not going to convert Bubas. Bubas is not going to look at the government more objectively. And until we get that happening, and I had a wonderful conversation this morning with a gentleman, a minister from Colorado I have known for years, and we were talking, and he was telling me, I was saying, what's your dynamic? What are you seeing? And he said, what I'm seeing, he said, is I know people. I have a reputation in the community. He said, as you know, he said, the reputation you when you were here, he said, I have a reputation in the community of being a who is knowledgeable of constitutional issues and other stuff. And he said, I came to your classes for the better part of 6 years. So he said, I have somewhat of a working knowledge here. And he said, the thing I am getting now is, he said, the people in the community who have heard of me, never met me, possibly may have seen me somewhere, but they have heard of me. He said, I'm getting phone calls now from people who are saying, hey, preacher, something's wrong here. We can't put our finger on it, but there's something wrong. And he said, I'm getting these phone calls 4, 5, 6 a day from people I don't know personally. And he said, why are they calling me? He said, they're calling me because I have a reputation out there of standing up for what is correct and even standing up constitutionally. So I think this is something that we are seeing more and more and more often, guys, is that people are beginning to wake up. I see it. But if we let their intelligence program turn these people against us, as we let their intelligence program turn these people back to where they were, we lose big time. If we have a chance at any type of recovery, we're going to have to do it by waking people up, not putting them to sleep.
Mike, I just want to say, you know, I think we're hearing some strategy and insight from you that I don't think people can hear anywhere else. I'm just sitting here taking notes and learning. And, you know, it's interesting, too, how the federal government is already trying to open the conversation with, you know, the biggest threat facing America is domestic terrorism and white supremacism. And so it just shows that the federal government knows that there's going to be a lot of resistance, and they're talking about this, even though there's no visible sign of any of this so-called domestic terrorism or white supremacism. There's no visible sign of it, yet they're already trying to put it onto the playing field as a threat.
Well, I totally agree, Dave, and you've touched on it. If I was running this criminal government and I was making plans, one of the first things I would have done was to get everyone in the world to demonize the white race. Because the only people who are going to stand up to my programs are going to be white folks. Now, I don't mean total. That's not a whole brush cover. But the majority of the people who are going to stand up against me are going to be white people. White people are known to revolt. Look at the pages of history. So that, and then for especially today, the Department of Defense to come out and say, oh, we need to celebrate the transgender soldiers of the Revolutionary War and the Civil War. And it just tells me that the intellectual level of this country is that there will be people who believe that. So this is, you know, that old saying about hearts and minds. They know that. That is something they are going to use. And all of this goes back to Joseph Goebbels in many ways. Go back and read his stuff. I put one of his quotes on Facebook the other day and got a warning and they were going to close my account. Just put a quote from Joseph Goebbels. And that old saying of you can know when you're over the target when you start catching flack. That is the point. And again, Cal, I am with you, buddy, 100%. And that would be my reaction emotionally to the government on this issue. Yeah, come and take them, jackass. Come on. Because eventually we're going to have to do it anyway. But if they decide to come and take them, I'd like to have a few million people with me when they make that decision. And that is the point. We have been working our butts off for years, many of us, Cal, I know you have, to try to get people to see the truth of this mess. And that hasn't worked real well because the people have not been uncomfortable. People are getting uncomfortable. And with the drought situation, and that was my friend in Colorado told me today that he just had to plow up 80 acres. Because they had turned off the irrigation. He had to plow to try to plant something else because he was a dry land farmer. He had 80 acres in seed. Irrigation was cut off. There was no way in the world he was going to get any crops. And so he's trying to find something else to put in the ground.
I didn't know they were cutting off irrigation to Texas. I've just heard that they're cutting off irrigation to Oregon, Northern California, and parts of Central California as well to protect some, you know, rare fish of some kind.
Well, I'm sure they will do that.
They're creating shortages on purpose. Drive by a car lot. They look at their inventory. They don't have hardly any inventory. Spare parts for equipment, heavy equipment and trucks, semi trucks are becoming hard to find, you know, simple little items. I got a friend who he's been down for a week now waiting on a smog sensor, an exhaust sensor for his semi truck. They have some shortage of this simple little piece of equipment, and that's not by accident. You don't just run out of smog sensors for a Cummins motor. You know what I mean? They're orchestrating shortages to make life miserable so the government can come in and fix everything. That's how socialism works.
Well, and isn't supply, control of the food supply the oldest communist trick in the book?
Oh, absolutely, guys. If you want a good playbook on that one, of course, here's where we get going back to the old phrase, those who fail to learn the lessons of history are destined to repeat its mistakes. Guys, go back and look at the Ukraine 32 and 33. Look at what Stalin did to kill millions of Ukrainians, not because they were out of food, but was because they were opposing his regime. And one of the wonderful things about that was the fact that the New York Times sent people over there and they came back and told the American public, no, it's not happening. Well, it looks like we got some music coming up. Be back on the other side. Thank you for joining us with Dare to Think Out Loud.
And unto the daughters of men, indicating that there were giants before the Nephilim.
And sons of God, plural. They weren't talking about Jesus coming down.
No, that's right. Yeah.
I'm Steve Crawford, host of Factor Theory Live. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Check it out.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and you will catch The Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's The Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
If you think for one second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself. is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio. All right. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Hey, welcome back to Dare to Think Out Loud here on Friday, the 18th day of June in the year of complete and total insanity. I just had a friend of mine tell me that the new unit, we're not supposed to call them women anymore, they are now birthing units. People, please tell me we haven't totally lost our minds in this country. And that is why I totally and completely believe that there are good people out there who are waking up. There are good people who have been disillusioned. And how do I know this? Because I was. I was in the paradigm. I believe that the government was always looking out for my best interest. I believe, of course, that was about 40 years ago. But I believed it at one time too. And how did I get converted? By learning the truth. And if the government's been demonizing us enough as it is, and especially over many periods of time, you know, the things they've done to people is just absolutely unspeakable, what they've done to people's private lives for trying to stand up. But we have to. We have no other choice. And I still believe that from everything I'm hearing, the people I talk to, more and more and more people are waking up and going, hey, something's wrong here. I don't know what's wrong, but something's wrong. Because, look, stuff is not like it was, and it's changing too rapidly. And there are some people going, gosh, I looked in the morning, and by damn, I was white. I haven't ever oppressed anybody. I've never owned any slaves. I didn't do anything. Why should I have to pay the price? You know, and I put out a meme with the help of a very talented lady. I put out a meme not too long ago that said, when is the black race going to become as upset at the people who sold them into slavery as they are the people who bought them? No, we can't. We can't talk about that. Holy crap. Yeah, they were sold into slavery by their own people. The ones who weren't sold into slavery were executed. Read the history, people. We've got to find some way of waking people up. And I truly believe that you can wake people up with the truth. I know we've been throwing it at them, Cal and Scorpio and Dale. We've been throwing the truth at them for decades, and it bounces off. They're impervious to the truth. But I believe that the government itself is opening a window and they're waking up enough people for us, at least the ones they're not vaccinating, that we're waking up enough people that if there is ever going to be a change, we are going to need those people. And as I look back on history, I look at what the Sons of Liberty did in Boston under the tutelage and the leadership of Samuel Adams. I look at what they did in the streets of Philadelphia. I look at what they did in so many places. And here's the thing that's going to be really hard for most people to understand, guys, is that if you're going to defeat this oppressive government that's coming for everything you own, you're going to have to break their laws. They've made these laws for a purpose. These laws have been made. They have been passed for all of you good law-abiding people out there, so you will abide by laws which make you a slave. You will abide by laws which lets the government take everything you own. Like Parson Whelan said last week, you don't own any property. Just don't pay your taxes. Don't pay your property taxes, and pretty soon people will come with guns to take it. You don't own anything. We have, to me, and you know, I'm so thankful for this, guys, because I believe that we now have an opportunity. The people we have been trying to reach for years who thought we were nuts, because we were, and we still are, but people, if you can offer them a glint at something that even shows them that the government is using something they trust, like the Constitution, that the government is using that to oppress them. Hey, if we can wake up 10 people, I'm willing to give it a shot. Dale, are you back with us, my friend?
Loud and clear.
All right, buddy. What are your thoughts?
Mike, as I'm listening, the concept is echoing in my head that this is a replay of the first part of the 20th century. You had in 1919, you had waves of Russian Jewish agents flood into Hungary and flip that government, and the Hungarians having a nationalism and a vibrancy that we have lost because of a lot of factors that didn't afflict them, threw those buggers out. They had to flee in the middle of the night when the Hungarians finally awoke, and they threw off the commissars, thousands of agents that came out of Russia, and regained their independence, their liberty in the sense of a Hungarian sense, their sovereignty, let's put it that way. And it wasn't until the Red Army came in and occupied them in the 40s that they lost it again. In Germany, as early as 1905, the same entity was trying to overthrow Germany. And by the 20s, you had Antifa, the same Antifa, operating on the streets of Germany. And, you know, you say what you will about the Weimar period and Germans at that time, they were politically a lot more literate than Bubis, and a lot of them got out in the street and fought these people. I'm sorry, I have a emergency vehicle going by here, but anyway, that's all they understand. This is the World Revolutionary Movement. It's the same entities, the same theories. Merrick Garland is a communist. We have to start calling these people what they are. If I can get on the soapbox for 2 seconds, it's really important to brand them and be accurate in it. And when it comes right down to it, Bubis is going to learn the hard way. And the question that's on lingering in everybody's mind that's already switched on is the violence going to amount to anything? Is it going to have any prospect of bringing about a renewal of what we wanted on this continent? And I don't have the answer to that.
Okay, Dave, you want to jump in here and give us your thoughts again, sir?
Absolutely, Mike. And again, I think you're just making some really cogent points here. And because it is dawning on, you know, the average normie, something is seriously wrong. And I think that's really one of the unintended consequences of this whole COVID hoax, is that it's dawning on many people that this whole thing was a nothing burger, and countless people lost their livelihood, their business, their houses, because they were lied to. And once that cat is out of the bag, you know, it's going to be hard to put the toothpaste back in the tube once people realize that the government is lying to them about everything. You know, the other day you gave me a big list of all the different major events the government lied about, and it was humorous because it was like 25 different things just in recent modern history. So it's going to be hard to undo that, Mike.
Well, I firmly believe this, and I've talked to a lot of people about it, just like these things about the flood in Istanbul. People, and I, a good friend, and I was talking about last night, I said, when the American public takes everything they hear from the media and everything from the government, and right offhand they say, that's a lie, and I'm not believing a damn thing until somebody shows me some evidence. Until we can change Bubas from where they are now, that the truth comes out of plastic heads on CNN, until we can transfer that to the people, to where they go, I don't believe any of this crap. I don't believe the COVID thing. I don't believe 9/11. I don't believe TWA 800. I don't believe any of this stuff, because the government has been caught lying time and time and time again. If the government had to appear in court, they could be removed as a witness for past lies. Their credibility would be shot. You know, one of the greatest quizzes would be, when's the last time the government told the truth? Cal, you got any thoughts on that, buddy?
Well, you know, I agree with you. I mean, what is it going to take to wake Bubas up, so to speak? I don't think that that's even possible, to tell you the truth. Many people are comfortable in the lie. Many people defend the lie. Many people defend and cherish the chains of servitude they've wrapped around themselves. I don't think that there's a majority of people that can shift out of that paradigm. But there doesn't really need to be a majority, just a really well-organized 3%, so to speak, minority committed to a certain cause. And that's what affects change. That's what has affected change throughout history. It hasn't been the masses of the people. It's been a small amount of people, the rabble-rousers, the rebels, that have affected change throughout history. It's just, okay, am I going to be a go-along sheep, or am I going to be a rebel? People got to make the choice. I can't make it for them. I just know what choice I can make for myself, and I can't make a choice for anyone else.
Well, that is absolutely true, Cal. But Bubas is going to have to, once Bubas gets hungry, and that's coming, once all of this comfort that Bubas cherishes is gone, once Bubas doesn't give a damn who's playing football this week, once Bubas's attention is transferred to how do I keep myself and my family alive, Bubas's eyes will open. And when I think of that, I can't help but think of, you know, these words. Are we disposed to be of the number of those who, having eyes, see not, and having ears, hear not, the things which so nearly concern their temporal salvation? For my part, whatever the anguish of spirit it may cost, I am willing to know the whole truth, to know the worst, and to provide for it. I have but one lamp by which my feet are guided, and that is the lamp of experience. I know of no way of judging the future but by the past. And judging by the past, I wish to know what there has been in the conduct of this government for the last 10 years to justify these hopes with which gentlemen have been pleased to solace themselves. Unquote.
Hey, Mike.
Sir.
Just checking our connection here.
Yeah, you're still here.
I want to make the observation that the 3% is the critical catalyst. But you take our own history and the revolution, the 3% were there and they persisted throughout the whole thing. But Bubas came over to them in large numbers. And it was events like the sympathetic newspapers up and down the Atlantic coast after the fighting at Concord and Lexington, and the misconduct, the harsh conduct of the elite British troops and what they did to civilians was magnified, amplified up and down the coast by sympathetic newspapers. And then in New Jersey, you had the same entity, the British Army, taking the winter silage, the winter feed for the animals that was across the countryside, you know, in people's farms, and alienating the people of New Jersey in particular, and Bubas started coming over. So it's kind of both theories are true, you know, and it's complex. The 3% is the critical factor. But at some point, the populist sentiment has got to go the direction, you know, the 3% is not going to prevail unless it has a lot of common folk with them. And people don't like to believe it. But yeah, the bankers sent Lenin back into Russia from exile with his $20 million in a suitcase or whatever it was, 20 million marks or whatever. And it was a tiny fraction of the population that was the activist, the Bolshevik entity, but they ended up hoodwinking and pulling over a lot of the common people. So I'm just kind of rambling here, but one is not exclusive of the other. One works with the other. And so far, the regime seems to have a real sway with Bubas. I mean, if you have a U.S. Army that's openly published a doctrine that says we've got to prepare for white insurgency, at what point when you're in the military do you not wake up to that? It's open Marxian racism, anti-white racism, you know. It's amazing to watch, but surely even Bubas has got to see it at some point, does he not?
Oh, I think so. But Dale, I have a question for you. You mentioned the brave men at Lexington and Concord. What made them go to Lexington and Concord? What happened prior to that that made these people decide to take up arms and say not no, but hell no?
Well, I'm not sure which part of it you have in mind, Mike, but it was the people behind the pulpit were militating against the British in many instances, and the specific issue was that the British army was going to go out and seize ball, grape shot, powder, and weapons reposing in some of these communities back there in Massachusetts. That's what they were doing on that morning.
Well, let me take it back a little farther my question correctly. What prompted the people of the colonies to oppose the Stamp Act?
Mike, you broke. Our connection broke up a little bit. You mentioned the Stamp Act?
Yes. What caused the people of this of the colonies to say, no, we're not doing that?
You're talking about the 3% tax related to the stamp?
I'm talking about the Stamp Act of 1765 that was imposed on the people that had been accepted by the leadership of the colonies, especially in Virginia, by the House of Burgesses. They had accepted it. They had a meeting. They decided, oh, well, we don't like it, but hey, we're going to have to go along to get along, just like people do today. What changed their minds?
A few mainly principles, mainly Patrick Henry.
Well, but
Mike, can I say something when we're talking about Lexington and Concord? Dale mentioned that, you know, the preachers were raising them against the British, and that's not exactly what happened, because you got to remember, these people at that time, those colonists, they viewed themselves as loyal British subjects. They even wrote it so much in their Declaration of Causes and Necessity for Taking Up Arms. They viewed themselves as loyal British subjects. Where they took umbrage against was against the Crown and Parliament infringing and violating what they viewed as their rights as Englishmen. So what, once again, it boils back down to man's unalienable and natural rights, aka man's rightful liberty. And that is the only path to salvation out of this. Every argument comes back down to, once you understand rightful liberty, you have now found the path out of this mess that we are all in. Because when you boil it down, it wasn't about country, it was about rights, not about country. Those men who shot their fellow English brothers at Lexington and Concord, they were their fellow English subjects. But they were standing for their rights, not for their country. They were standing for their rights. And that's the change that needs to happen, is the people need to place their liberty and their rights above all else, or to do as Patrick Henry said, give me liberty or give me death. In fact, to place liberty above life itself. And in an understanding of rightful liberty, that's an understandable statement to make, because it's through rightful liberty that everybody has life. It was through liberty or free will that everybody ended up being here to be alive anyway. So it's actually the original choice everybody made. And so it is obviously the obvious path back to where that original choice was made. Salvation, so to speak. And that's what I got for that.
Well, I would concur with you. I'm not sure if I was a little bit ambiguous in what I was saying, but it was the issue of being disarmed. 9 years before, you had the militia, a critical part of fighting the damn Indians and French. And the concept that the British government was now going to come and treat you, yeah, as a British citizen, but as a second-class British citizen, it wasn't about separation at that point in the minds of a lot of people. It was about, they're going to take our shot and our powder, and they're going to defang us. It's elementally unacceptable, fundamentally unacceptable. That's why I always heard some of the shot was actually hidden in one of the pulpits of the churches in one of those towns that morning.
Well, I totally agree with you gentlemen on what you're saying, but I think the seed of this thing was planted 9 years before the British decided to take their guns.
Well, that's because
they're shot.
That's because the Stamp Act. Well, that was the Stamp Act, was a taxation without representation. The common viewpoint back then was, as Englishmen, you could not be taxed without representation, and they had absolutely no representation in Parliament. Their only representation of any form of government was their colonial governments, and so only the colonial government had the right to tax them as Englishmen, not the British Crown or Parliament, because they had no representation there. And once again, it boils down to, you don't have the right to tax me without my consent.
Well, I agree with you, but I still think you guys are missing my point.
Well, fire away, Mike. I want to hear your idea is.
I think yours and my point are just two different viewpoints of the same object. Is probably what we'll end up at.
Here is the thing: was it the leadership of the colonies that led the revolt against the government of England?
No, it was the rebels. It was a rebel such as Patrick Henry who spoke out against it. With the crowd.
You're trying to tell me it was the domestic terrorists, the smugglers, and the tax evaders.
Yes, that's who it was. They were so effective of it, they actually forced the Federalists to go along with it. The Federalists had a choice, you know. Wow, we can either go along with the crown or get snuffed out by our fellow men right here in the colonies, or we're going to have to go along with these rebels right now because we have to. I mean, yeah, they were so effective in their rebelling that they forced the Federalists to comply with them and to actually fight with them on their side. Yeah, so, yeah, stay the course. Keep rightful liberty in your heart, and when the time comes, Bubas will be forced to fight with us, not us fight with them.
And it turned into an ugly civil war, did it not?
Well, yeah, I'm not.
At least in the southern colonies, that's what I've heard.
Well, that I think is very true, but it also happened in the north. And one of the things that sticks in my mind as a student of history is how many of these people who outwardly supported and publicly supported the crown throughout the Revolutionary War, how many of those people ended up in attendance at the Constitutional Convention?
Yeah, didn't we call them Tories?
Well, they were called Tories among other things, but I mean, you know, we have one of the things that really gets to me is one guy in history. Most people have probably heard of him, but they don't know much about him. But that was Tench Cox. Tench Cox was a delegate to the Constitutional Convention. But yet, Tench Cox actually sold goods to the Redcoats. He was a merchant who sold them war supplies. Not only that, there was a rumor that he actually served with the Redcoats at one time. When the Redcoats were run out of Philadelphia, Tench Cox went with them. And he was known among the people in his own state, in his own city, he was known as He Who Looks Both Ways. That was his nickname. But he was
at you're talking, you know, convention. You're talking real politics here now. You guys, you're getting down to the nitty gritty. If George Washington had caught Benedict Arnold, there'd been no trial. They would have hung it. There wouldn't have been a tribunal. They would have hung him on the spot. And that's what it's going to get down to with Bubas and all this crap in this country with all this deception. The average person is going to have their bacon right in the fire. And I'll tell you what, the Merrick Garlands and the rest of them, they're laying the groundwork right now for it. They're perfectly happy. And the DHS and its hundreds of thousands, Jesus, you know how well paid those people are? The low deductible dental and all the rest of the crap that they bathe in, they're more than happy to put us in the gulag, you know? So it's just the same cycle, isn't it? It's the same cycle.
Well, it is. My lot in life that I have chosen for myself is to try to get enough people to actually look at this and accept it. And I found out a long time ago, talking to them doesn't help. If the people are going to, you can't take the truth to the people are going to have to come looking for the truth. And that is why I go back to that initial statement about Missouri and the other things is, how do you respond? And if you're going to help Bubas reach the truth, you're not going to do it with an emotional plea. It's going to have to be logical, because Bubas is attached at the hip to the government through emotions. You can't take Bubas's emotions away from him and win him. He has to get uncomfortable, and he has to seek an answer to why he is uncomfortable.
That was a huge part of Reconstruction, wasn't it, Mike?
Absolutely.
The secular religion of, you know, stomping out the grapes of wrath and the Great Union and all that crap.
Absolutely. They had to go in. They had to reconstruct. People, that is, Dale, I'm glad you brought that up. Probably one of the least known subjects ever covered in this country is Reconstruction. And I have gone back recently and looked at sources on what Reconstruction was like in the South. And we've had a couple of programs on that, but we really haven't gotten right down to the nitty gritty yet. But stop and imagine coming back home that the Yankees, when the Confederate soldiers who didn't have shoes and everything else when the war was over, these men had given everything they had for freedom. And don't give me the crap about slaves. That had nothing, very little to do with it. Look at their letters home. Look at the fact that 94% of the Confederate soldiers didn't own slaves. That's the false narrative. That's what they have to give you to make you believe that the people who stood up and fought for their rights were bad. That's part of the program. The people who would stand up to the federal government and say, look, you're oppressive. Those people have to be seen in the eyes of Bubas as being the bad guys.
And Mike, how many school teacher carpetbag school teachers did they send down? Do we even know? And all basically what they were establishing was a young pioneer system.
Yes.
How is it any different?
Yeah, they did away with it. We've got the same thing in the school system. It stayed with us since, and look at what they did to the education system in the South. Look at what they did to the churches in the South. They replaced the ministers. It became a government-worshipping church, not a God-worshipping church. That was intentional. These people are very good at what they do. And their mind control, their psyops, and they keep using the same psyops. Why? Because they work. So the only thing we can do is to hope that in some way, shape, form, or fashion that we can get enough of Bubas to wake up to what is actually going on, because I see no other way around this. Because I'll be honest with you, and I've said this before, and I know people aren't going to like it, but you cannot be a law-abiding citizen and be free under an oppressive government. Got any takers for a debate on that, Dave?
No. And I guess the good news is that as we move forward, this is going to become more and more apparent to the average person as they see, you know, every aspect of their lives wanting to be controlled by this, you know, all-consuming federal government. And in a way, Joe Biden is kind of a blessing because he's such a bumbling fool. And the media covers up for all of his inadequacies and inability to hold, you know, a thought together for more than 5 minutes. And it's another sign to the average person, something is really wrong.
Well, you know, one of the things, Dave, and we've talked about this before, and I have said on several instances that this election that we had in 2020, this was a very purposeful psychological operation, because look at the things it accomplished. Number one is they could have pulled off this fraudulent election very easily with the media, with everything like this. While the election went down to there, Biden wins by mere percentage points. Had they done this for the American public, had they done this for Bubas, it would have been accepted. The fraud that the people see was the fraud that the government gave to them to see. The people didn't discover this fraud. It was eliminated. It was illuminated to them for a reason. And that's part of the psyop. There's no better psyop than to say, okay, look, I can do whatever the hell I want to, and you are helpless to oppose me. And that's exactly what the election of 2020 was designed to do. Yes,
it's there. Classic demoralization.
Yes, you just destroy the people, because now all of these people who believe that the answer to the world was to be found at the ballot box, now realize they are They have been gelded. Your ballot box no longer works. And we just showed you your ballot box no longer works. They put it all out in the open intentionally. Yes, the ballots were screwed up. Yes, everything else was wrong. They did it intentionally. Then they gave all of these hopes. I remember watching all of these people. Oh, look at this. All right, we're their experts. And look, this thing's going to the courts. The courts are going to overturn this. All this is going to happen. Yeah, the Supreme Court said, nah, we ain't looking. That, again, was an in-your-face part of a PSYOP. Number one, your elections don't work. Number two, your court system doesn't work. What the hell are you going to do about it, baby? That's what they said with this election thing. But then to keep those who might be catching on at the time, we have the Q hoax. Oh, well, you know, look, Trump will be inaugurated on March the 4th. Just wait and see. Okay, and then it went to March, April, May, June. Now it's August. You keep stringing the people along with that false hope. Oh, somebody's going to come rushing in and do it because I'm too damn lazy to do it for myself. Somebody's going to come marching in. We're going to have this great... Oh, look, they've already, according to some crazy website, they've already hanged Hillary and a couple of the other people who were involved in this fiasco. They were all hanged with Trump present, presiding over their executions. Come on, people. Do you really believe this? No, but you want to. That's the whole point. There's nothing believable about it, but you want to. It's hope. It's hopium, as it's now being called. What did Patrick Henry tell us about hope? We shall listen to that siren song of hope until we are all turned into beasts. In the military, what do they teach you about hope? Hope is not a method. Neither is it a force multiplier. Hope's a great thing in some contexts, but it's not when it comes to this kind of freedom. Hope is an illusion that they use to strangle you with.
But guys, doesn't it?
Go ahead.
Doesn't it look like they've got a plan to be victorious if we remain passive and let the Gulag state fully mature? Or if we revolt, they've got a plan where they absolutely trounce either way. Is that correct, do you think?
Oh, that's part of the operation. See, one of the things when you're planning a PSYOP, and I've set in on one or two, when you're planning, and not for the U.S., though, when you are planning a PSYOP, you have plan A, and you look at every contingency that could happen from that plan A. You have plan B with all of the contingencies that might happen if you have to use plan B. You have plan C, which is the plan that if everything else goes wrong with A and B, you have C covered. And then finally, you have your oh shit plan.
That's exfiltration, isn't it, when you're talking about foreign operations?
Yes. That is exactly what you do. Those are the four steps. And I was tasked on a couple of occasions. Bring me four steps with all contingency plans covered. How are you going to do this? What if this happens? What if that happens? You would bring it in for a briefing. You'd be sitting there with 10 or 12 people. And you would go, okay, here's what I'm going to do here, here, and here. Suddenly everybody's saying, okay, this happens. What's your contingency? So you had a contingency ready. You give them your contingencies. They say, okay, here's your contingency. What if this happens? These people have been planning this stuff for decades. This is not something somebody decided to do on the 1st of November of 2020. The plandemic was not something they planned to do on the 1st of January of 2020. These things have been planned. They have looked at every contingency. And part of throwing Fauci to the wolves, part of this stuff where you got John Stewart, who has been in the bag of the establishment for years. If he wasn't, he wouldn't have been on TV that long. So John Stewart comes on and makes Stephen Colbert look bad. And everybody gets all orgasmic. Look, it's like dealing with trained seals. Everybody gets excited. Oh, isn't this wonderful? Look what John Stewart did. Yeah, he did. That's part of the plan, Jack.
You know, this may be outside the scope of this conversation, but I wonder in the eventuality where people finally do resist physically, and maybe even there's a couple of states that coalesce and are resistive, although I'll believe that when I see it. I wonder about the externalities. I wonder about Chinese intervention. And Mike, you would be certainly better qualified than most of the people I've interviewed to offer an opinion. Is that just a chimera? Is that a real unlikely thing to have a physical intervention of the Chinese here when we're trying to, during the time we're trying to sort things out amongst ourselves?
No, I think that's part of the plan, you know, and I could go into a very elaborate plan. I think I have a pretty good idea of where they're headed with this. The people who want to take everything over and just completely control it, we can call them the international bankers, we can call them whatever you want to call them, the people who intend on controlling this whole damn thing, they will use China, they will use whoever they can to effect what they want to do. But here's the point, is they fully realize now that they want to control America, which they will eventually get around to doing. But the point of it is they don't want to go to war because they don't want to destroy the infrastructure that's standing. Because if we destroyed the infrastructure in Germany or Japan, we put it back with money. We rebuilt it, which created debt for the American public to pay, which benefited the bankers. But when they want to take a country where they might have to pay for putting all of the infrastructure back, they go, nah, hell no, we'll take this without destroying the infrastructure. We'll leave what's there.
Especially when that infrastructure is in and about the finest topsoil and the greatest supply of really good fresh water on the planet. So those are gems not to be jeopardized, I would think.
Well, and they started it back so many years ago. And, you know, this is the point I try to make to people. I try to tell people, well, my Constitution, of course, you're going to like this part, Cal. Oh, my constitutional rights. I have these rights. No, you don't. You know, people tell me, please tell me, all of you Second Amendment supporters out there, how well has that Second Amendment worked? Do we have any gun laws in this country that tells you you can't own a gun? Do we have any gun laws who tell you where you can carry a gun? Do we have any gun laws that restrict the type of guns you can have? You don't have a Second Amendment. It's an illusion. And you don't have any other rights either. But the people have to wake up to this. They have to understand this before they will ever affect a change. To make it as graphic as I can, nobody changes a tire on their car until they can visually see it's flat. Nobody's going to change something that they can get by without doing it. And that's what the plan is about. People are expecting something else to happen for this government to be brought under control by, you know, an orange-haired idiot or whatever they want to do. They are expecting this to happen, and it ain't happening. You know, if I can keep telling you, you know, what do you tell somebody if you know, if somebody, you owe somebody some money and they want their money and you know you can't pay them, what do you tell them? You keep putting them off. Putting them off. Okay, that's what we got. Okay, this thing's going to be fixed. Q, everything's behind it. The thing that just absolutely blows my mind is the people in this country who go absolutely batshit crazy over Michael Flynn and Q, and I believe Michael Flynn, Q was an operation by Michael Flynn, But everybody is talking about, well, when General Flynn does this, when General Flynn does that. Do you people know that General Flynn has always been a Democrat? His entire life he's been a Democrat.
No, I wasn't aware of that.
Yes, he and his brother now has one of the top generals in the U.S. Army now. Both of them are lifelong Democrats.
Yeah, well, Flynn played an important role in keeping hope alive for about, a year? I don't know. Well, it hasn't even been a year since the election, but for several months.
Yeah, he's one of the players, and I still believe what was his previous job? Defense Intelligence Agency Director.
Oh, yeah, baby.
Oh, now who would know better how to run a PSYOP than he would? And that's why I still believe he's been in charge of the Q project from the beginning. And they had to start the Q project and start throwing out tidbits. If you're going to go fishing, you got to have bait. If you're going to convince that fish to bite your hook, you have to have something on it that looks like it's going to be good. And they started throwing out the Q movement back in 2017. They started throwing out with a few tidbits of truth here and there. Once you get the people hooked, they're good. They'll follow Q no matter what Q does. Once they have decided Q is the deal. It's all one huge psychological operation, people, and we keep falling for it. Dave, you got any thoughts, buddy?
Well, Mike, what's interesting about the Q thing now is that the mainstream media is increasingly talking about this and taking, little tidbits from it that are actually true, talking about, a cabal running the government and how this is, dangerous extremist beliefs. And it just shows you how they can take this, sort of encapsulate and corral all of the conspiracy theories into this one thing called Q, and now use it as a weapon against anything truthful coming out.
Master plan. That's exactly how you do it. Cal, you've been quiet too long, buddy. Did you fall asleep?
No, I'm here. I'm just thinking in my mind how, the most productive slave is the willing slave, and powers that be have created a lot of willing slaves out there. Q, that's just part of it. How many? You mentioned Joe Biden. I mean, it should be obvious to everyone by now that whoever the president of the country is, isn't really running anything, because Joe Biden couldn't run to the bathroom if he had to. So it should be obvious by now that there are other powers out there that are actually behind the scenes running everything. Yet everybody still supports the system. It escapes my logic how you can see everything counter to what you've been taught right there in front of you. The president doesn't run the country. He's not in charge of anything, really. Joe Biden's a perfect example of that. Yet we need to have a president. And it's like, but he's not running the country anyway. He's a figurehead. Well, that brings a question. Well, who's he a figurehead for? Who's behind all of this? Who's benefiting from all of this? And who's paying for all of this? But people just won't take the time to think about that. Come to your own conclusion on it for all I care. Who's benefiting from it? I'm certainly not. I can look around and I can see people suffering and doing without stuff and having their rights taken away from them. They're definitely not benefiting from it. Yet they're still supporting the same system that's doing it to them. It just escapes my logic on how they can do it.
Mike, and just to build a little bit on what Cal was saying, I saw, this is Joe Biden's first time on the world stage, supposedly. And I watched a few minutes of Vladimir Putin's reactions, his press conference to meeting with Biden. And one thing he said that was really quite funny, and I think Putin was sort of laughing into his sleeve as he said this, that Joe Biden said some very nice things about his mother and talked about things in the past. And while that wasn't terribly relevant to what we were talking about, it was still nice to hear. I just couldn't believe that.
Well, here's a question I got for you guys. And We saw a video of G7 that the news media was showing us, right? So
copy that.
So my question is this: was that real or was that staged? And if it was staged, how would you know?
Because it was on the media. Everything on the media is staged.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
I don't understand how people don't understand it. It's all staged, people. It's all theater.
That's why I brought out, that's why I brought out, Cal, the deal with the flood in Turkey. That's why I brought that out as the very beginning of the program. If the news media puts it up there, Bubas accepts it as gospel truth. Especially when they're favored agents. You know your PSYOP is working perfectly if Rachel Maddow said something and all of her people agree with it, and Tucker Carlson said the same thing and all of the other side agrees with it. When you've got people like, you know, when you have people making defense for corruption. When Trump said, let's take the guns first, due process second, and the Republicans made excuses for him. Oh, it's a game. He's playing 5D chess. He's, you know, then 4D chess, whatever. You know, that's just that, you know, but if Hillary would have said it, or if Biden says it, oh, kill the bastards. That is a PSYOP at its perfection. People just will not accept the fact that it's a PSYOP. Well, guys, we're rapidly running out of time. Dave, you want to tell the folks about what you've got coming tomorrow?
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, hour two, I'm going to have Dennis Fetcho on for an hour, fellow host here at Revolution Radio. And we're just going to kind of cover, you know, a variety of topics and see where the conversation goes. Then hour three, I want to open up the phone lines and let the audience chime in and see where they want to take the conversation. So it ought to be an interesting day. Saturday, 1 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Thank you, buddy. Dale, what's going on in your world for the weekend?
Menial labor. By all accounts, I've got all kinds of chores to do, Mike, but I'm tickled to have a chance to have been with you guys during this 2 hours. And I haven't done radio other than with Mike here for a number of years, and it's a nice reprise. I appreciate it.
Hey, buddy, we're always glad to have you whenever you can make it. And Cal, are you going to continue with your Father's Day retreat for this weekend?
Oh, yeah. I'll be out here, you know, up here at the lake doing 12-ounce curls for the rest of the day, probably. Mike, thanks again for letting me be on with you. And Dale, it was a pleasure meeting you. I hope you do come back again soon and often onto this show. I really enjoyed it.
That's very kind of you. I would love to be a listener to the show, and I've got to get into a routine where I know you guys are on and catch you whether I'm participating or not.
Okay. Well, from my sentiments, I would hope you would be a regular guest on here. I enjoy your insight and your thoughts and your perspective. I appreciate it and value it. So thank you.
Well, we're headed into the Hall of Demore, and all we've got is each other.
Well, you got exactly that right. And gentlemen, I will tomorrow, as for myself, I will be on the highway. I will be headed from the state of Iowa to the state of Georgia. And so be heading back in that direction. My son is home from Istanbul, Turkey, and from Croatia on a business trip. And I get to spend a little bit of time with him and get reacquainted, and then I'll be heading out. And I got to spend some wonderful time with my daughter-in-law and my granddaughter, who recently had brain surgery. So I've really enjoyed that aspect. And folks, look out for you. We've got a friend of the show who is down in Mexico, hospitalized with a procedure, and we wish her the very best ever and a quick recovery. So, Dave, thank you, buddy. Thank you, Cal. Thank you, Dale. And thank you, Revolution Radio, for giving us the opportunity.
Yeah, and I just want to thank Dale also for coming on. Really great, Dale. Good to hear your voice and hear your input. Thank you for your time, sir.
I think he dropped off. I think he anticipated the end of the show probably before we did there, Dave. So what do we got? We got about a minute left, buddy?
Probably even less, yeah. We're down to the final few seconds.
Well, all right. As soon as we hear the music, we will exit. Guys, I can't thank you both enough for taking your time out of your day to come with us. And I hope we cracked a few eggs today. And there is the music. Folks, have a wonderful weekend. All of you fathers, have a wonderful Father's Day. All right. See you next week.
Listening to Revolution Radio.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We talk about decentralization and that.